Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. It'll be his last joke of 2017, and then we'll start all over again in 2018. And we're also going to have another good Blackhawks Express. They're on a roll. We'll have that plan as well. We will play back one of the many classic times, because for me it's a Christmas tradition, from David Letterman's show of Jay Thomas telling the Lone Ranger story, which is one of my favorite Christmas traditions of all time that we don't have anymore. But we want to play that back. We'll play one of the many times he told that story. It's just so great. That's all coming up. We're going to get some other Christmassy stuff that we're going to talk about as well. But right now, I would like to welcome into the studio my guys who review movies with me every Monday morning, Colin Suter and Eric Childress. And let's welcome them to the show. Hi, guys.
Hey there.
And they're in studio. Wait a minute. Do I have the wrong mic?
Maya?
There we go.
I think I'm on.
There you go.
Hello.
There it is.
All right.
How are you?
Now we're officially.
You know, I've only been working on this board for many years. So anyway, welcome, guys.
Thank you.
And the reason why they're down here live in studio, normally we do it over the phone, is because this weekend a Star Wars, a little independent movie called Star Wars, opened up, The Last Jedi. And every time a Star Wars movie comes out, which now is yearly, pretty much, we have these guys come down to the studio. And we did a special a video that we'll be posting on our website, and we'll give a link to our Facebook page as well to check it out. But I had the guys bring down some of their toys, their Star Wars collectibles and merchandise and all kinds of cool stuff. And we've got an exclusive video that you can see on our web page pretty soon of Colin and Eric and their collection and our reaction to that collection, which is really, really cool. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later on. But that's one of the special things that we had, and so we thought we'd have the guys come down live, and then we'll talk about the Star. We'll review the Star Wars movie in a little bit. So welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Before we jump into the movies, and we'll review the new Star Wars movie in a little bit. Let's each get your take on like the first time you saw Star Wars and how you felt about it, and like as your some of the stuff from your childhood about Star Wars. Let's start with Colin.
Yeah, so it really started with the toys for me. I think I was 5 or 6 when I first saw a friend of mine had this line of toys of robots and monsters and characters with little plastic sabers as weapons, and I thought that was pretty cool. And then I heard that it was a film. And
so you didn't know it was a movie then?
No, I mean, I really just had no awareness of movies at the time. Not really.
You were 70. How old were you in 77?
I was about 5.
Okay.
Or 4 or 5.
4 or 5.
Yeah.
Okay. And Eric, you were 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
When it first came out. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I don't think I actually saw the movie until probably 1979, really. And I had just kind of vague memory of that experience. It wasn't a grand experience at all. Just wasn't ready to sit in a movie theater for 2 hours.
For people who might not know, that there was a time way back in the 70s when a movie would be in the theater a year. Like, mm-hmm. You could see a movie in a theater a year, year and a half after its release, especially a movie as big as Star Wars. Even they would bring movies back, and you could see them on the, mm-hmm. A movie came out last year, but let's re-release it, a year later. That's a concept that, because it's pre-video and pre-VHS and pre-beta and all that stuff. Star Wars was essentially in the theaters, if you don't remember this, for like 2 years. I mean, it was almost in the theater all the way up till the release of Empire. Like, you could conceivably see Star Wars on the big screen, like, just a month before Empire came out.
Yeah.
So that's why, you saw it in 79, it came out in 77.
Yeah, and I think the first time I really saw it on the big screen, like, really absorbed it, was during, it was a 2-week run of the film. If you remember, they purposely released it for 2 weeks only. It's on the big screen again.
Yeah.
And that's when it played at the Arlington Theater, and I could ride my bike to that theater, and I saw it a couple times with my friends, so...
Now, then Empire must have been mind-blowing for you.
Empire, I was very much, and I had already heard all the spoilers beforehand, but it still didn't matter to me. I was like, I still had such a great time watching it. So.
Okay. All right, Eric, first time for you?
Yeah, it was kind of similar to Colin, is that I had the action figures. Mm-hmm. I think my parents, all the things they could have bought a young precocious kid at the time who really liked movies were these action figures.
Right.
So I have greater memories of actually seeing Empire in the theater well before even fully grasping what Star Wars completely was. I remember that my parents had a friend who was like fully into the VHS revolution. So you went to his house and he had all the tapes all over his room. So, like, you know, they were in one room watching Caddyshack, and I was in the other room watching Star Wars and Flash Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I remember that, and then I remember when Star Wars eventually came to cable and played nonstop. Mm-hmm. That was really, I think, the first time I ever sat down front to back to watch Star Wars. I have fractured memories of seeing Empire in the theater, but it wasn't until Star Wars really hit cable, probably in like 82, 83 maybe, when we first got it, that I remember watching it nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then so Jedi was the first one you saw? Like
Jedi was the first one that I absolutely remember, you know, stand in line for hours. Actually, we made my dad stand in line. We went shopping. We made him stand in line at the Woodfield 1 and 2 to see that movie. And yeah, so that movie just completely blew my mind.
Yeah. I was 12 when Star Wars came out, and I've told this story before. It didn't capture me as much as it did. My friends loved it. A lot of my friends went and did and went, because 12 is right in the wheelhouse. If you're 12 years old in Star Wars, you should love it. I, for some reason, I was okay with it. I saw it a few times, you know, because I would go with my friends. Hey, we're going to see Star Wars again. I'd be like, sure, it's a movie. And so, first time I saw it was at the Norwich. Saw it with my dad and my friend Dan, and then eventually saw it again, you know, in other theaters. But that's the year the Close Encounters came out. Close Encounters was the one that I latched onto. That was the one that captured my imagination and really blew my mind. And I remember seeing it a bunch of times. And that, by the way, was one of the best, cinematic experiences I've had this year. Was seeing Close Encounters on the big screen again. Amazing. It's funny, two of my favorite cinematic moments, and we'll do this on the year-end show, were seeing 40-year-old movies. It was that and Suspiria were like two of my favorite moments in the theater all year was seeing 40-year-old movies. Anyway, so so when that came out, I liked it. You know, it was cool. Saw Empire at the Esquire Theater, and like the weekend it opened. Place was packed. We were in the balcony. And, you know, really loved Empire. And then, you know, saw that a few times. And then Jedi I saw at the Golf Mill about a week before I graduated high school, at the Golf Mill Theater. That's long gone, the Golf Mill, in Niles.
Yeah,
it's a different theater. It's a different
kind of theater right now.
Yeah, but it still is a theater, that area.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a lot of movies there, too. And, you know, and I wasn't crazy about Jedi. And then that was about it. And so I got excited when Phantom Menace came out. I was like, you know, it's Star Wars. I was 12 when it came out. I was like, okay, this will be fun. And then after Phantom Menace, I was like, okay, man, that's it. So, but the reboot here that J.J. Abrams has done, and the subsequent sort of Star Wars universe movies, we'll tell everybody what we thought of The Last Jedi. But I'm pro Force Awakens big time. I just watched it again over the weekend to remind myself about it, so I was ready for Last Jedi. And I love Rogue One. I think Rogue One is terrific. And so what Abrams and Disney are doing right now, I'm pro on it. Very, very pro. And I know you guys are too. So anyway, that's a little preview. We'll get to our official review of The Last Jedi, of Star Wars The Last Jedi. But we got a couple, actually, believe it or not, there are a couple other movies that opened. We did not, none of us saw Ferdinand.
No.
Like most of the country.
Now, nobody, we'll do the box office in a little bit as well. But that's John Cena providing the voice. I guess this is a story that I should know. I guess it's kind of it's a children's book or something.
Well, I think didn't Disney do a variation on this many years ago? Ferdinand the Bull, you know, the bull that wants to be, you know, not thought of as a beast and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think it was a storybook too.
I think it was based on a storybook, or at least, you know, watching all the late night shows and all the cast members of Ferdinand popping in to plug it, they would mention like Child Story, and I've never heard of it.
I feel before. Like I should know about that, but it's not ringing a bell.
Yeah. And then why would they release a children's movie? Well, maybe because they're thinking the kids would be too young for Star Wars, because Star Wars is a little, it's PG-13, and but I don't know. Why would you release a movie against a Star Wars movie? I don't even understand
that. I don't know. And I mean, considering everything that happened this week with Disney and Fox, you couldn't pick the worst time for them to, you know, lay their cards on the table like, hey, should we keep Blue Sky Studios? Well, look at Ferdinand.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so nobody saw Ferdinand, and so we're not going to give you we're not going to be able to give you a review.
Nothing to say.
But there are two other movies that we'll talk about, and then we'll dive into Star Wars: The Last Jedi. Colin and Eric are here live, and again, they're live in studio, and they've got all their crazy toys with them. And maybe we can hear what a porg sounds like. And do we have a porg here? Then we'll break. That's a porg, everybody, and we'll explain what that is a little bit later on. All right, we got to take a break for the news, and we'll come back. Colin and Eric will review all the new movies right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. This is my last live show of 2017. I'll be back the morning of January 2nd, I'll be back. So I'm taking a little holiday break here. And I got my buddies Colin and Eric come down to studio here live. We're reviewing the new movies, and we will definitely talk at length about Star Wars: The Last Jedi. And and again, they came down to the studio. Hi, guys. Welcome
Hello.
Back.
Hi.
And they brought their merchandise, their toys, the collectibles, and all that stuff. And we've got an exclusive video showcasing all of Colin and Eric's stuff, Star Wars stuff, that you can check out soon on the webpage at WGNradio.com. And we'll link it up on our Facebook page as well. So coming up a little bit later on, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday. We got some Christmassy stuff to talk about. We got a great Blackhawks Express to play from last night's game. And we are going to play back one of the many times that Jay Thomas told the Lone Ranger story. You guys would watch that, right?
I just heard it for the first time the other day.
No!
I don't watch a lot of late night television, really, so I'd never heard that story
before. My God. Colin, what about you?
No, that's new to me, too.
Oh, no, you guys. Let me really quickly remind everybody, because we're going to play the audio of it now, so you know how great it is.
It's amazing.
It's unbelievable. So every year, for many years, David Letterman's last live show before the Christmas break, he would have Darlene Love come on,
right?
And they would do Baby Come Home for Christmas, which is, you know, obviously one of the greatest Christmas songs of all time, one of the greatest performances of all time, Christmas song. Mm-hmm. That was a yearly tradition. They also had a big giant Christmas tree with a meatball on top of it. Instead of a star, there was a big meatball. So every year he would have Jay Thomas come on. Jay Thomas from Cheers and so many great stand-up comedian, really funny actor. Was he Murphy Brown?
I think Murphy.
Yeah, Murphy Brown. He's been in a lot of TV stuff. Yeah. Very, very funny guy and a really terrific. Unfortunately, passed away last year or year before. So he'd have him on, and they would take turns throwing a football at the meatball on top of the tree, and whoever knocked it off won. So that was like the tradition. But in between that, Jay Thomas would tell what David Letterman called the greatest talk show anecdote of all time, the greatest talk show story ever. And every year for Christmas, the tradition was he'd come down, he would tell this story, and it involved the Lone Ranger. And I don't want it because we're going to play it later. Mm-hmm. It's spectacularly funny, and he tells it really well. And every single year that he would tell the same story, Letterman would fall off the chair laughing, like every time.
Now, when did that tradition start with Darlene Love and all this stuff? I mean, it wasn't in the 80s, right?
Because I want to say late 80s. It might have been when he got to CBS.
Got to CBS?
Yeah, 90,
okay.
92, 93. When I think when he got to CBS.
I think I wasn't watching as much then.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
But it was as great. And it was Jay Thomas, football, meatball, Lone Ranger story, Darlene Love. Mm-hmm. That was a Christmas tradition for me every single year. And then, you know, Letterman retired, and then Jay Thomas passed away. So we want to bring that back. And if you look it up, Colin, look it up on YouTube. Just Jay Thomas, Letterman, Lone Ranger.
Okay.
Boom. And it's, as you know, you can attest to it.
I died.
It's
laughing.
Just unbelievably funny.
It's a perfect story.
And it's perfect, and it's funny every time. And to watch Letterman genuinely laugh his ass off every year at the same story. And Jay Thomas told it beautifully. So it's a Christmas tradition, so I thought we'd play the Lone Ranger story a little bit later on. So, all right, speaking of Westerns, I'm a professional. I got a plaque in the sidewalk downstairs for nothing.
You do.
The Ballad of Lefty Brown. Mm-hmm. Where's Bill Pullman been? He was in Independence Day, right? Yeah. The sequel.
I was about this far from Bill Pullman at Toronto this year.
Were you?
Yeah, he wasn't there for Lefty Brown. He was the Battle of the Sexes. He's in.
Oh, that's right. Which I totally forgot he was in Battle of the Sexes. That's right.
So he was in that, and he was like him and his son were like going around like seeing movies during the day, and so like some fan like stopped him while I was standing in line, and so like Bill Pullman was there.
They
so,
didn't
like,
just call him Bill Paxton, did they?
Oh, I hope not. I hope not.
Loved you in Twister.
Yeah.
You were great in Twister.
Yeah.
That was like when I was that very weird week I spent hanging out with Gary Busey. I've told you guys those stories, right?
Yeah.
Insane nights that I spent with Gary Busey. We were at the
almost as good as the Lone Ranger
China thing, Club. But. The China Club one night, and a group of girls were across the room from us, and they were pointing and kind of like they clearly recognized him as a celebrity. So they sent a girl over and they said, "Hi, I don't want to bother you." And he's like, "Well, how you doing?" And she's like, "Oh, I'm great. I'm great. We really, really loved you in 48 hours." And she said that to him, and he went nuts. And said, "I wasn't in 48 hours. That's Nick Nolte." And then he's like, "I was nominated for an Academy Award for the Buddy Holly story." And she got all, you know, like almost crying, and she walked away. And he's like, "Damn it, that happens all the time." And he walked off to the bathroom.
Maybe he can be in the remake that they're working on
now. They're working on a remake of what?
48 hours.
Come on now.
The Safdie brothers. The ones that just did Good Times.
Now I like those guys.
With Jared Carmichael is writing it, I guess.
Oh man, no. I mean, I like all those.
I say no.
I like those three guys though. I like the brothers, and I like Jared Carmichael.
Yeah.
That's just a bad idea. No. You don't want to mess with that. All right, Lefty Brown.
Yeah, this is a film that Western premiered at the South by Southwest Film Festival this year. Stars Bill Pullman in what is essentially a sidekick role. He plays sort of like the right hand man for a farmer, collector, rancher, played by Peter Fonda. Peter Fonda, who is basically doing John Wayne in the movie, in the brief time that he's on screen, he ends up getting killed, and Pullman, as Lefty Brown, basically has to step up to the plate and figure out exactly why this happened, who was responsible for it, and he's the secondary person, you know, around town. Not everyone, even people really close to him, believe that he might not have had something to do with this himself.
Mm.
So he kind of has to go rogue to sort of solve the mystery and, you know, make himself, the number one guy, essentially. You know, it's like the way it was described at South by Southwest. It was like if Walter Brennan got his own movie and he ended up having to be the hero of a movie. And that's kind of what this film was like. And the cinematography in the movie is really gorgeous. I mean, to see this on a big screen was really something. And it's a really good premise in that I think Bill Pullman gets a role, you know. He doesn't get a lot of roles like this. I mean, he's always seemed very welcome on screen. I've always liked Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
And he hasn't had a chance to really get a really good role, juicy role like this in a long time. And I think he's really good in the movie. Kathy Baker plays the wife, Peter Fonda's wife. And Jim Caviezel plays the sort of the mysterioso rancher guy, businessman who might have been involved in some of this stuff. And, you know, it has all the Western tropes you're expecting, shootouts and, you know, grand landscapes and that kind of thing. And it's a pretty good movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, Colin and I both have screeners of it.
Yeah.
And because you know, at this time of year, I have like 700 screeners on the coffee table right now. And like, Colin, tell everybody what happened when you watched it. And it's not really a reflection of the movie.
No. But I did fall asleep.
I did too. And this was like, you know, movie number five.
Yeah, me too.
Know what I mean? And I was like, and it just was out.
Yeah.
So I do want to, I have it at home. I will during my break here because I've got a bunch of days off in a row and I plan on, plowing through the rest of the screeners I haven't watched. And this is definitely one of them that I will watch.
Yeah.
So that's The Ballad of Lefty Brown. Okay, cool. And it's Bill Pullman and Peter Fonda. I'd say Kathy Baker, man. What was the last time she was in a movie?
Something big like this.
Yeah.
A big role like this. It's been a while.
Yeah.
This movie's on demand as well. I believe it's on DirecTV.
Yeah, it is on demand.
Yeah.
So Battle of Lefty Brown. Okay, cool. All right. Let's find out. Colin, why don't you tell us about Call Me By Your Name? We've been hearing a lot about this movie.
Yeah, well, this was movie number four on the day I watched.
Oh, that was the day.
So maybe I should have went for a comedy.
I watched this movie, Call Me By Your Name, after I watched Ghost Story. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen it in a long time, so I watched the Ghost Story. By the way, that movie rules.
Yeah.
That movie really rules. I mean, the second viewing, I was like, you know, this is a really great movie, man. It's a beautiful film.
Yep.
We'll be talking about that one in a couple of weeks.
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so go ahead.
Well, this movie, Call Me By Your Name, takes place in northern Italy, about 1983, and Armie Hammer plays this med student, I think, and he's working as a research assistant to Michael Stuhlbarg, who has a 17-year-old son who is really the main character here, and he's played by a newcomer named Timothy Chalamet.
Who's having quite a year.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But for those of you who might not know, he's in Lady Bird, and he plays, like, her second boyfriend, the sort of dark, cigarette-smoking, let's-hang-out-in-the-parking-lot guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So here he's sort of coming to terms with his own sexuality, and this being 1983, it's not so easy to come out and even just to come out to yourself. But the more he starts spending a lot more time with this guy who's working overseas, played by Armie Hammer, and the more time they spend together, the more they have a kind of bond and the more open they are. And so this is a coming of age tale, a first love story, and with the knowledge that the summer will eventually end. And this has been, it's been getting a lot of attention from our organization, definitely.
Oh, everybody. Everybody's gone nuts on this movie.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's written by James Ivory of the Merchant Ivory team. And we haven't heard from them in a while.
It's been when I saw his name on the credit, I was like, what was the last time James Ivory was it like Remains of the Day or
right?
something? I mean,
no, I think they did a few since Remains of the Day that weren't as successful. This one is definitely, I mean, when you realize that, you definitely feel like why it's kind of it's a very much a slow moving film like all their other films. It takes its time telling its story and developing its characters. So this is not like Brokeback Mountain where, where these two men are, discovering their sexuality and being open with it. And like right from the get-go, this is a slow build up to that. And it's interesting that it takes place in 1983 and there's not a lot of attention focused on that, but it's there because, that was the time when it was really hard to come out for a lot of guys. And Timothy Chalamet, this guy's going to be around for a while. It's a really beautiful performance. And Armie Hammer, I don't think he's ever been better. But it is a film I'd like to revisit again because, again, like I said, it was like movie number three or four, whatever day it was.
Yeah, this is not a movie to watch after three movies.
Yeah, it's not a marathon. You don't put this on in a marathon.
You have
to sort of make it a day of, make it the evening film, which I didn't do. So I owe it another viewing. But it is a very good film that I do recommend people go see.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll find out what Eric thought of it and what I thought of it right after we take a break. Eric Childress, Colin Suter are here. They're live in studio because it's Star Wars weekend, and we wanted to have the guys come down, and we are going to review and talk at length about Star Wars The Last Jedi with no spoilers. No spoilers. And Colin, you've seen it how many times?
Three.
And Eric?
Twice.
I've seen it once. But I've seen it. So there you go. All right. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke. It's a jokey time. We will play back the Blackhawks Express. Blackhawks are on a tear, man, and it'll be fun to listen to that. Jay Thomas telling the traditional Christmas Lone Ranger story on David Letterman. We'll play that back. And we got a whole bunch of other Christmassy stuff to get to. This is the last show of that I will be hosting for 2017. I'll be back in January of 2018, the 2nd of January. And I hope everybody has a great holiday season and a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll be back there. So that's why we're going to do some more Christmassy stuff here. Right now, though, we are movie reviewing, and it's Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Colin and Eric join me every week to review the movies. They're here live in studio because of the Star Wars movie we want to talk about, and they also brought down all their collectibles and merchandise and toys and stuff, and we did a video that you can find at soon on WGNradio.com of the guys showing off all of their really cool Star Wars stuff, and we're glad to have them in. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Before the break, Colin told us about Call Me By Your Name. And Eric, you saw this at what festival?
Sundance.
At Sundance.
Premiered at Sundance this year. And so, I have to go back and revisit exactly what movie of the day it was for me at Sundance, because we all know what my schedules are like.
A little
crazy. But I think it was like the noon movie, so it was like the second movie of the day, and I thought it was just great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're at Sundance and, you know, you don't have a lot of big premieres. You have premieres, but they're not titles you know about. It's all a lot of independent stuff that you're not really aware of. And when you see listed in the catalog, Teen Discovers Sexuality and Army Hammer co-stars, you go, oh.
Yeah.
You know, you go like, am I going to put that on my schedule? And I ended up doing it, and it was one of the best movies I saw at Sundance this year. And, you know, it takes its relationship, the relationship in the movie. Forget the word serious. There's a tenderness about it. There's a real specialness about the characters and the way that they interact with each other. And, you know, because the boy in the movie is 17 in the film.
Right.
And Armie Hammer's supposed to be in, like, his early 20s, like 23, 24, something like that. So that might raise some red flags for some people. But it's, you know, it's a completely consensual relationship. And, you know, one of the things that I got to say about this movie, and I don't say this often about movies, whether they be heterosexual or homosexual, this is an incredibly sexy movie.
Mm-hmm.
An incredibly sexy movie. The scenes between the two of them together, you just kind of like, you could hear the hush over the audience, and you just kind of go, damn. You know, that kind of reaction. And Michael Stuhlbarg in the movie doesn't have a huge part. He's there, he's the father, and he's mostly in the movie shown in the context of his work with Armie Hammer, and then Armie Hammer goes off and with the boy. But he ends the movie with a monologue that we could just retire the best monologue of the year thing, because this is the winner.
Yeah.
This is the winner, and it's a monologue that I think should be like broadcast on, like, you know, over cities and stuff, and just listen to his words. And, you know, I can't think of a better year for that monologue to come out in. And, you know, it's a monologue that I will revisit frequently and spread as, you know, in any manner possible. I think it's a really wonderful movie. I'm looking forward to revisiting it before we make our list in a few weeks.
Yeah, I think it's great too. And it's also just so beautiful to look at. And you know, I think the Italy Tourism Board owes a check to the makers of this movie, because seriously, like 15 minutes in, I was like, I want to move there. So the scenery is beautiful, and the director is from that area, so he knows the area very well. The thing that there are many things about this movie that are really great. You mentioned a lot of it. The intimacy that happens between these two characters, you don't see that very often, especially in a same-sex situation. You know, this is about first love. It doesn't matter whether it's heterosexual or homosexual. It's about that, you know, that pain that you feel when you fall in love for the first time, or the joy that you feel, and then eventually what happens is pain, especially when you're of that age. The chemistry between the two of them is through the roof, man. And seeing them do the talk show circuit is really very funny and very pleasurable, because they're both heterosexual, you know, and they tell this great story. Armie Hammer tells this great story. Have you heard the story about how the directors wanted them to just rehearse, you know, to get to know each other, and they didn't really know each other all that well, and the kid got cast. He was very nervous, you know. And so the director, how do you pronounce his last name? And I'm Italian, I should know this.
Guadagnino? Nino?
Luca Guadagnino. Okay, so Luca Guadagnino, who, by the way, directed the upcoming Suspiria remake. he's like, okay, well, why don't we just rehearse? And so he goes, just flip the script to whatever page. We'll just randomly flip the script. So Luca opens up the page like scene 70, and they look at the page, and it just says Elio and Oliver make out. That's all it says. And so he's like, okay. So they go for it and they start making out. And he goes, Whoa, no. It's, you got to be more passionate than that. It's got to be more intimate. It's got to be more passionate. Really, really, you know, because they're both really apprehensive and nervous about this, you know, because they got, I mean, there's really a lot of intimate scenes in this movie. Mm-hmm. So they go to get in and they start making out again. And they're making out and they're making out and they're making out. And it starts to get really long. And they're both like, what the hell is going on? They're making out. They're making out. And they stop and they look. The director walked away. And that was their first scene together. That was their first day. And that's how they that's how they're making out for like 5 minutes, and the director just left. And they're like, you jerk. The
director went to get a peach.
Hello. Well, that's for people who have only seen the movie.
Right.
Yeah, it's a beautiful movie. I do want to we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to just talk a little bit more about this movie, and then we'll jump into Star Wars. But there are a couple of other things I wanted to talk with you guys about concerning this film. But we have to break for the news. Okay, so you guys hang on. We'll take a quick break. We'll finish talking about Call Me By Your Name, which all three of us are highly recommending. It's a really beautiful film. And then we'll jump into Star Wars. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everyone. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We got a Blackhawks Express to play back. We're going to talk about some Christmassy stuff, too, since this is the last show I'll be hosting before Christmas, and then we'll be back for the new year. Eric Childress, Colin Suter joined me live in studio because it's Star Wars weekend. Star Wars The Last Jedi opened up this weekend. We'll talk about the box office figures as well for it. But they came down early, and they were kind enough to come into the studio and bring a bunch of their collectibles and toys and all kinds of cool Star Wars stuff. And we recorded a video that you can watch soon on our page here, WGNradio.com, where you can see all the toys and all the cool stuff. So, Colin, Eric, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Before the break, we were talking about Call Me By Your Name. Which is this new, really beautiful film. Takes place in 1983 in northern Italy, about this budding romance between a 17-year-old boy and a college intern. It's a beautiful film. But I wanted to mention a few other things about it really quickly. It takes place in 1983, and it features the psychedelic first song, "Love My Way," which is one of my favorite songs of the 80s, truly one of my favorite songs of the 80s. And I wanted to mention, watching Armie Hammer dance to that song in this movie is a joy. I mean, I just love it. Now, he's been doing the talk show circuit, and they keep playing the damn song. Every time he comes on, they're like, come on. And he's like, no, I don't want to dance to it again. And they just keep making Armie Hammer dance to "Love My Way." And I love that, and I think it's great. And then after their sort of their romance, you know, begins to become real and they get more intimate, they're wandering around through like this chateau at night, later in the movie in Italy. And all of a sudden he hears "Love My Way" playing, and he gets so excited. Armie Hammer gets so excited, he grabs the kid by the hand, and they all run over, and there are a group of teenagers standing outside their car smoking and then drinking, and they got the doors open, and the song is playing from inside the car. And so he grabs a girl, and they start dancing. And while they're dancing, he's speaking in Italian to this woman, and they're dancing to "Love My Way." So you get to see Armie Hammer dance to it again. He's like, oh, I saw the Psychedelic Furs. I saw them in concert. They were so great. And she's like, yeah, I've seen them too. And he goes, Richard Butler is the best. And Richard Butler is the lead singer of the Psychedelic Furs. Richard Butler, in the early 80s, at that time period, had a very distinctive look and a very distinctive hairstyle. And he wore like the early 80s clothing. In the final scene of this movie, and I'm not giving anything away, in the final scene of this movie, Timothée Chalamet's character comes in. This is after the whole summer thing is over. We're now into the winter. And, he comes in, he walks in the door, and for people who are fans of the Psychedelic Furs, this is kind of, he's dressed exactly like Richard Butler. So it's this wonderful, like, you know, like he's still thinking about this guy. There's no question about it. And he had headphones on. He was clearly listening to the Psychedelic Furs. He's got a Walkman on, but he's dressed exactly. He's got a beret. As soon as he walked in, I'm like, oh my God, he looks exactly like Richard Butler. And that's the kind of attention to detail that this movie has. It's very subtle in that way. You know, just like all the sculptures and stuff that they talk about, the things that they discover when they're looking at, you know, they're looking at his father's studies and his work. All of that applies to what's happening in their real life. So there's not a moment wasted in this movie. It's a long film. It's a slow moving movie, but it all matters. You know what I mean? It all matters. And that's why it's so devastating. That like the last part of the movie is just so heartbreaking. Now, before we move on, You mentioned the monologue. I don't even know. I mean, his Michael Stahlberg's monologue at the end of this movie is perfect. It's perfect. It's beautiful. It's overwhelmingly beautiful. And, you know, I got to say, Timothy Chalamet, his reaction to it is fantastic. Like, I want to give him credit. He's quiet during the monologue. It's a monologue, but he's sitting next to his father on this couch, and the reaction from him is so beautiful. And you're just thinking to yourself, when, you know, because this kid has just gone through this experience, and I don't, you know, who doesn't want their parent to react that way? Like, isn't that exactly what you want your parent to say to you? Isn't that exactly what needs to be said at that time? It's a beautiful scene. I mean, you guys were obviously affected by it.
Yeah. Please.
Yeah. God, it's a really terrific movie, and people should see it. That's Call Me By Your Name. It'll be interesting to see how well it does. I mean, I think it's going to do fine,
and I think you'll see it up for a number of awards.
It will be up for a number. This kid's going to get nominated for Best Actor. I think he might be
Oldman might be the...
Oh, yeah, Oldman. That's right. Yeah. Oldman, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. See, and the other thing is we've got these performances this year where in any other year, like, this kid could win. Any other year. But you got Oldman doing, like, a career performance. And then, like, in any other year, it would finally be Sam Rockwell's year, but Willem Dafoe.
Right.
And you can't argue that. I mean, they're both great performers.
Right.
But I just, you know, Sam Rockwell, by the way, hosting Saturday Night Live in January.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be worse than what happened this weekend.
No.
Wow.
No.
All right. All right. Well, you guys brought your stuff down there with us. Let's hear it from the Porg again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's the Porg.
And now, what do you think of the movie, Nick?
What about the last?
Well, the Porg just gave his review.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because we understand Star Wars language just the way.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, like everybody understands what BB-8 is saying, and you know, like everybody does, and what R2 is saying, and Chewie. People understand Chewie. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with Eric. I think that you should actually tell us what the plot is of Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
Yeah. You always wish that you always had the scrawl in front of you, so you could just read the scrawl.
Right.
Just, start there and just go from there. But, I mean, this movie pretty much, The Last Jedi, we're in episode 8, and it takes place almost immediately after the events of The Force Awakens. The rebels have been caught, essentially found by the First Order from the base that they were on, and they are escaping. They have to plot a massive escape and get out of there before they're basically completely wiped out. And that includes Poe Dameron, Oscar Isaac, who is still incredibly impulsive and is the best fighter pilot in the galaxy, and he helps lead this raid at the beginning that it doesn't quite, go the way that everyone planned it. Meanwhile, Rey has found Luke Skywalker. And the movie takes, we get right to that moment that we ended on in The Force Awakens. And Luke is not interested in being a part of the Resistance anymore. He has hidden himself away for a purpose. He's still scarred by what happened with Kylo Ren. And he's going to find out some more bad news as a result of that. But Rey keeps pushing him. Knows that there's something growing inside her that she really wants to understand. And Luke, whether or not he's going to train her or show her the ways of the Force, that's a part of the drama as well. And then you have Finn, John Boyega, who is. Has woken up from his coma and still not, he's still looking for a way out, but he's mostly looking for Rey. He really wants to be reunited with Rey, and that brings him to a new addition to the story, a young woman named Rose, who is basically just a guard, and she works as a
technician.
That's a good, best way to describe it. She would love to be part of the Resistance, but she's, that's where she is.
And she just lost her sister.
In the aforementioned raid.
Right.
And then the two of them team up to then thwart the First Order's plan that they're continuing to chase them throughout the galaxy. They can, don't want to give away too much, but everyone has their own purpose throughout this movie.
Okay.
As always.
All right. And I want you to tell everybody what you thought of it.
I loved it.
I don't think anybody's surprised.
No, and you shouldn't be. Even as someone who defended the prequels in the past, I'm happy to go back on some of that praise now with this new trilogy, because as you mentioned, Nick, the direction that this thing is going, I think is absolutely wonderful. I think Force Awakens was this bridge to, with the old school and the new school, to sort of bring everyone on board, the brilliant touch to bring the old cast back. It wasn't just some wipe out everything and start fresh. They bring the old cast back to sort of massage us into this new world. And at the same time, I think the one thing The Force Awakens doesn't get enough credit for is introducing these wonderful new characters that we immediately got on board with. That we were, by the end of the movie, first act of the movie, we were totally invested in their stories, and by the end of it, we couldn't wait to see where they went next.
Right.
And here, Rian Johnson, who wrote and directed the movie, I think does some beautiful things with the themes of Star Wars. That the overriding theme of the movie that we're seeing is that you have to kill the past if you want to go forward in the future. And everyone has their own variation on that. Some just in their relationship, whether Finn is going to be cowardly or he's going to join the rebellion. With Kylo Ren, he is literally destroying the past to fulfill his purpose. And Daisy Ridley's Rey is, trying to, discover where her lineage is, discover where her, who her parents were and what, if she's going to become a Jedi or not. And Luke is completely, he's already shed away the past. And the interesting thing in this movie is that not only is that a thematic arc for the characters, but it's actually an arc for the series as a whole. Because obviously we know everyone knows what the shocking twist was in Force Awakens, and that was sort of the beginning of it. And I'm not introducing that as a spoiler for this one, but you see in this movie the literal representation of them, of Rian destroying the old school to present us, to bring us into the future. We saw maybe a little bit of that Rogue One that was a prequel of sorts. It was the old characters, but it was a new generation of characters. And we're seeing that here now. And I think it is so perfectly encapsulated what I think is the best final shot in any Star Wars movie to date. The final, there are so many shots during the last 45 minutes of the movie where I was just sitting there, I'm like, don't end here. Please don't end here. Please just keep going. And the movie just kept going. It kept paying off things. And then it gives you that group shot. It holds on this group shot for a moment. I'm like, okay, here comes the fade in, the director. Yeah. And then they pull back for a second. And they go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they give you this final moment that is so beautiful, so perfect, so touching. It really moved me because it's not just the next generation of the rebellion. It's not just the next generation of Star Wars fans. It can also represent the next generation of filmmakers who have seen these movies and are inspired to create their own thing, just the way that Abrams and Rian Johnson were. I think it is a beautiful, beautiful movie. On top of being incredibly thrilling, really exciting, other things that I'm sure we're going to touch upon, some really badass moments in this movie. I loved it. Okay. It's even better the second time.
Okay. We got to take a break here, and then we'll come back. We'll find out what Colin thought of it. I'll give you my review, and then we'll just talk in general about the movie as well, because I'm sure there's a lot of stuff we need to say. So it's Star Wars The Last Jedi, and we'll have more of that coming up right after we take a break. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5. Got some Christmas stuff to talk about. We'll play back Jay Thomas's great story about Lone Ranger, which is a Christmas tradition, used to be on Letterman. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday, and we got a Blackhawks Express coming up as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, 312-981-7200. You can also check us out, follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me every Monday morning to review the movies here in studio this week, because it's Star Wars week, and we had the guys come down, bring some of their toys and collectibles down, and we did a video of showcasing all of their stuff, and you can find that online soon at WGNRadio.com, and there'll be a link on our Facebook page as well, so you can watch that. But they're here, and Eric just gave his preliminary review of Last Jedi, and he loved it, seen it twice. And Colin, Go ahead.
Loved it, too. Yeah. And I've seen it three times. And the first time I saw it, it was, I mean, this always happens when we first see a new Star Wars movie. We go to the press screening, and the excitement of it is part of the reason. I mean, the first time you see it is never the same time after that. So I always like to see it two or three times before coming in here to talk about it. And the first time I saw it, it was incredibly exciting, but it felt very busy. Like, not in a bad way, but like, it's just, there's an A story, a B story, a C story, yeah, a D story. Yeah. Like, everybody has their own little plot going on here. And it's sometimes got a little hard just like keeping track of the threads. Like, oh, this character's back. Wait, when did I last see them again? And okay, yeah, that makes sense. All right. But the second and third time I saw it, it felt a lot smoother, a lot tighter. I noticed a lot more little subtleties in it that I didn't pick up on the first time. So it gets richer every time I see it, which is a cool thing to say about a Star Wars movie. And I really just appreciate a lot of the themes that Rian Johnson explored in this, especially with, I mean, you know, the Force and being a Jedi. And it just kind of harkens back to, I mean, what we think about, like, the role religion plays in spirituality and just, you know, how, you know, if you claim, you know, the idea that the Jedi, that if the Jedi's die, the Force dies with it, and like how much that of that is just vanity. And I just love that he introduced that idea in this whole thing. I also just think this is the perfect Star Wars movie for 2017. And I know this is not written in with all this stuff in mind that we went, you know, that we've been going through this year, but like, just remember the beginning of the year started with the Women's March. And Carrie Fisher's face, her spirit was all over that march. I mean, she had just died.
Yeah.
Of course. And the scenes with her in this film have this extra weight to them that they would not have had otherwise.
Oh,
I mean, we would have been, I mean, if she hadn't died, we'd be saying she's really great in this movie. She's carrying a lot of it on her shoulders, and she's doing, you know, the best acting she's ever done in a film. But now it's like there's this whole other dimension to it. And I got to say, like, one of my favorite scenes is a scene that might have been left on the cutting room floor because it's not that, like, it doesn't push the story along, but it's a scene between her and Laura Dern.
Yep.
Oh my God, like the dialogue, just listen to the dialogue in that movie. Like, Laura Dern is representing every woman in America who was at that march, talking to Carrie Fisher and saying what they would want to say to Carrie Fisher. And it's beautiful. And Eric, you talked about the final scene, which I know we won't give it away, but like, I think the scene, the what one character says before they cut to that scene is so vital. It's like, you know, it's like, what is gonna save us? Well, our past is actually also gonna save us. We have to throw it away, but we also have to remember the good stuff. We have to remember the legends and the heroes and the stories, and we have to take those with us into the next generation of, you know, whatever our next battle or whatever our next confrontation or conflict is gonna be. And that's such an important point that this movie makes about that sort of thing. Every time I see this movie, it gets richer and richer, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think it's great, too, man. I just thought it was really, really great, and I loved it. And, I'll tell you what my thoughts after we take a break. So we got to take a break. I'll tell you what I thought of it, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it. The Star Wars Last Jedi, The Last Jedi, is out, and we'll come back and talk more about it right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And we've got some Christmas stuff we're going to be talking about as well. But right now we are in the middle of the talking about the new Star Wars movie. Eric Childress, Colin Suter live in studio with us. They brought down their merchandise and their toys and all the cool Star Wars stuff that they have. And we've got a video exclusively that's available at WGNRadio.com soon where you can see all that stuff. We're back. We're talking about Star Wars The Last Jedi. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, I know you guys both loved it. I loved it, too. I thought it was really, really great. And what you said, Eric, I think perfectly sums it up. It is this... This is the new Star Wars. This is the new thing now. So, you know, everybody loves the old stuff, but this is where it's going. And I think Rian Johnson boldly took it another step, like really bravely and boldly took it. And as a result, there's backlash about it, which I just think is ridiculous. Because, you know, it's funny because people, when Force Awakens came out, the naysayers were bitching about it because it was too much like A New Hope. Like, it was a carbon copy of A New Hope. put the thing in the droid, find the droid, blah blah blah. You know, so they're bitching about it now because this veers a lot away from the earlier Star Wars stuff. People are bitching about that now. Like, what do you want? What do you want? Mm-hmm. So there are wonderful allusions to the earlier stuff and bringing back some of the characters. The best thing Mark Hamill's ever done, in my opinion. I think Mark Hamill's great in it. I think he's great. And Carrie Fisher, I mean, please. I mean, obviously, she's phenomenal in it. And she's in it a lot, too, man. I mean, she's a major character in the movie. And, you know, and again, these new characters, I mean, that we know, this is really, you get to see a lot of Poe in this movie, which I was happy about because I loved him so much in Force Awakens. I wanted more of him.
And give him a real arc.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. And he's Oscar Isaac. It just rules in it. And there are, I mean, obviously, on the simplest of levels, the effects are amazing. The big battle sequence at the end on the planet with the salt and I can't remember the name of the planet, but that they're on is amazing, visually unbelievable. There's a huge confrontation at the end between the two main characters, the two, like the good and the evil, just badass and just incredible. And there's just so much great stuff in it. It's exciting. It's funny. I like the Porgs. I don't care. I think they're cute and I like them. Man, he's happy about that. It's exciting, and it's, you know, it runs 2.5 hours, and it doesn't feel like it's 2.5 hours at all. There's not a moment in this movie that drags. And I really love the direction that they went into. I want to talk a little bit about the performances. You mentioned Laura Dern. Laura Dern is phenomenal in this movie. And that scene between the two of them, oh my God, Laura Dern, and you could just see it in their faces, especially Laura Dern's face.
Laura Dern has never been more happy to deliver a line of dialogue.
There's no question about it.
That scene.
Like,
yeah.
You
the
could
look
just,
on her face.
Exactly. You could just see
she's so happy.
Laura Dern light up during this scene that she gets to work with Carrie Fisher and say this dialogue. It's a special moment. It's, I mean, really, not just in the movie, but for the actresses themselves. And there's a lot of stuff in this movie that goes beyond the movie. There's stuff in this movie that is, I mean, it's really, there's just a lot of stuff going on in this film. And it really is about a lot in killing the past. Some of the performances, obviously we mentioned Carrie Fisher. I think Mark Hamill's great in it, obviously, bringing him back. I think Kelly Marie Tran is tremendous, and I think her character is wonderful and a nice addition to it.
Fantastic.
And the stuff between her and Boyega is great.
Yep.
So I love that stuff. Benicio del Toro shows up
oh my God.
For another weird performance where he, like, sometimes stutters and sometimes doesn't, but he's great.
Bring him back.
He's the most original stutter I've ever heard.
It's so weird. Yeah. He's Benicio del Toro in it. You know what I mean? And I love the character.
Yeah.
There are a lot of, like, sort of, I want to talk about this off the air, if you guys can help me, because there are, like, some cameos in the movie. The guy who played the safecracker with the guy gambling.
Yeah.
Now, is that the dude from The Artist?
No. That's, you want me to say who it is?
Okay.
It's Justin Theroux.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's who it is. Yeah. All right. Okay. I thought it was the dude from The Artist. I thought it was the guy from The Artist.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, Oscar Isaac is fun in it. There's a really hilarious scene early in the movie between Hux and Poe.
Oh gosh.
Where he's like, new phone, who dis, essentially, which I thought was hilarious.
I think are they all going to open with a funny scene with Oscar Isaac?
I'm fine with that. Yeah. Me too. Absolutely. But I want to mention, you know, and again, all this stuff is great. The story, the where it's going, it's deep, it's significant. Star Wars fans should be happy. Really, really happy, because this is a pretty extraordinary piece of work. But I got to tell you, man, Adam Driver is unbelievable in these movies. He really is unbelievable. Like, his performance in this movie, I think, is Oscar worthy. I really do. I think, you know, supporting actor nomination, I would vote for him. He's unbelievable. They do some stuff between him and Ridley, Daisy Ridley, that's really amazing, and it takes it to another level.
Yeah.
But man, the last like 10 minutes, Adam Driver in this film, but like he's playing it so well. There's so many different emotions happening in this. There's a scene, a fight scene. Obviously, I won't give anything away, where he and Daisy Ridley are in the middle of a huge fight. It's so badass. And he's like, what happens after that?
Mm-hmm.
The acting that happens between him and Daisy Ridley, it's great.
Yeah.
Like, really good stuff. Like, wow, that's great acting, which you don't normally expect from a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
But I wanted to point out how good the acting is in this movie and how rich the characters have become. But in particular, I think Adam Driver is amazing in this movie. Really amazing. Not just a one-dimensional villain. Lots of stuff going on. Really conflicted stuff. And it's all there on the surface. It's just, it's a terrific film.
It's really interesting that you guys bring up a couple things that I think might be point to some of the backlash that we're hearing about. I mean, okay. When I was posting stuff on Twitter earlier, and I just tried to put in The Last Jedi, the other hashtags would come up, Last Jedi suck, Last Jedi awful, all these kind of things. Okay.
Yeah.
Kylo Ren is kind of playing that generation of Star Wars fans. You know? Kylo Ren is kind of that thing, and whether they're savvy enough to recognize that, there adds an additional irony to who that character is and what was going after. And I'm really glad that Colin mentioned the Woman's March. Okay, you know, not that, you know, we, you know, because you try to layer some sort of political thing over it, which Star Wars has always had a political thing to it anyway. So to
the
ignore
word
that
the word
is just,
wars is in the title,
yeah. Right? Yeah, right. yeah. So to ignore that is just ignoring what's going on in the movie. But one of the things that, you know, one of the things that upset fans, or not fans, but trolls for The Force Awakens was, oh, now we got a chick.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, that. So there's that. But here, Rian Johnson doubles down, and triples down on it. Because this entire movie is about a bunch of petulant boys.
Yeah.
Who are all taught a lesson by a woman.
Yeah.
Every
single
character in this movie. you know, Poe's arc is entirely about that. He's a guy that just wants to, you know, he's cracking jokes. He wants to blow stuff up, but he's getting people killed, too. He wants to do the right thing, but he's not doing it the right way, and then he's taught by women.
Exactly.
You know, John Boy, you know, Finn, you know, gives a new direction with Rose. Rey brings Luke back.
Right.
You know, all these things, all these characters are so instrumental to what's going on, and I think that's another reason why, again, whether they're savvy enough to recognize that, I can't really say, but I think that that's another thing, just like, oh, the women in this movie strong, and that means it's a political thing. No,
it's a good point, man. That's a really, really good point. You're absolutely right. And then, you know, we're talking about a lot of the stuff that works on so many different levels and politically what the movie kind of meant and how it affects people emotionally during this period of history. But it also just kicks ass. It also, I mean, just on the simplest of levels, the action sequences and the special effects and the characters and the creatures and all that stuff. Wonderful stuff.
Sound design.
Everything about it, technically, you know, is great. There's a sequence where Finn and Rose essentially are riding these giant creatures through, like, a racetrack and they destroy a casino. All of that stuff is fantastic and really fun. And the another thing about it is, and you know, this goes all the way back to New Hope, where, you know, the cantina scene where you're introduced to all these weird characters. And that's become sort of a thing that's in every Star Wars movie now. Mm. They triple down in this one. I mean, to the point where, like, you're going to miss a lot of these really intricate and crazy characters that just kind of fly by, you know. And that's another reason why when you go back multiple viewings, you can watch scenes like that and go, oh, look at that thing. And look at this character. And what's going on here?
But what's interesting about that whole casino sequence is that it's not overdone either. Like, it's very refined. Like, they didn't, like, overpopulate it with weird creatures and weird things going on in the background. It's there's enough going on to where, you know, and a lot of humor in it, too. I love the idea of using, you know, putting coins into BB.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Oh,
and then the payoff for that.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's just
That's another thing about this movie is, like, there's so much going on, but every little setup is paid off.
Yeah.
It's like a Zemeckis Gale Star Wars movie in a way.
Yeah.
You know?
There's so much going on. And you know, for fans of the, you know, I really think that there's a really huge emotional payoff at the end of this film. You know, the use of Luke Skywalker and the way he comes back, you know, it's really, and I'm not even a huge Star Wars fan, and yet the payoff to that at the very end was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great, man. I really do. And I'll definitely see it again. It was really interesting to watch Force Awakens, like, about 16 hours before I saw this. Well, I mean, again, it was a nice refresher because I hadn't seen Force Awakens maybe about a year. So I watched the whole thing. But like to see the transition between what that movie was and what this movie is, it's more complete. You know what I mean? Like watching mm-hmm. how they're the progression that they're making. So the third one in this trilogy, so it'd be episode nine, Abrams is coming back to direct that.
Right. Right. And the other thing that the Rian Johnson, I think, will be, you know, there was my explanation for why there might be a backlash. Again, it's a little skeptical exactly where it's coming from. It's just one is just blatant trolling.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, two is the woman thing that I mentioned. But also three is that Rian Johnson is almost trolling the trolls by reveals.
Yeah.
In this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like all the people that have written think pieces and have tried to decipher everything that they thought they knew about The Force Awakens and its secrets for 2 years, Rian Johnson went like, yeah, no.
No.
You know nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know absolutely nothing.
Exactly. All right, cool. It's a great movie, everybody. And you don't even have to be a big Star Wars fan to love it. So let's take a break, you guys. Hang on. Mm-hmm. And then we'll come back. We'll talk box office about how well it did over the weekend. All right. We got a break here for weather and traffic, and I got the weather for you right now. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How you doing? We are here live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we did all of our Monday morning movie reviews and a special visit in studio from Colin and Eric in honor of the new Star Wars movie. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk about the box office, shall we? Sure. Star Wars The Last Jedi, $220 million. That's less than Force Awakens. I was surprised by that.
By just how much it was. I mean, it's a weird story considering that's the second biggest opening of all time.
Right.
Behind Force Awakens. When I heard $45 million that it made just on Thursday, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then they're just like, oh, but Force made $57 million. So I'm not quite sure why that was.
I think some people are waiting.
It could be in the holiday season. I mean, I don't think this is obviously not going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, you know, one of the reasons why The Force Awakens just pummeled at the box office is because how much time there was in between Star Wars movies. You know what I mean? Especially between good Star Wars movies. And so people were chomping at the bit for Force Awakens. This one was, you know, we're only 2 years away. Well, a year, because Rogue One is. So now we're getting a Star Wars movie every year. Maybe people are like, okay, I don't have to rush out and see it immediately.
And I think there are some people that really love Rogue One, but I think that there are more people that are more in my camp that like the movie or not like the movie than there are people who outright love it.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I love Rogue One.
I have found people that, you know, just kind of like, yeah, it's fine. You know, and that's kind of been my reaction to it as well.
Yeah. Okay. So. All right. So the $220 million. Ferdinand. Smart move, releasing it. $13.3 million. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that had to be. Everybody knew that was going to happen, right?
Yeah, but I thought that they probably thought that maybe they could get, like, a low 20 number out of it. You know, the spillover from Star Wars, it's sold out. You take your kid to Ferdinand, something like that. And movies that have, family films that have opened that low have gone on to make $100 million, like Prince of Egypt, Stuart Little, for example, but not often. So this is on the low end of December family spectrum.
Okay. Number three, Coco, $10 million, $150.8 million.
Yeah. Still behind Moana's pace, but ahead of Tangled's pace. So still right in that like 220, 225 range that we've mentioned a few times already.
Have you watched it yet?
Not yet.
Okay. You got to watch it.
I'm going to.
Okay. Number four, Wonder, $5.4 million, $109 million. That's a big hit.
Yeah, it's like $9 million away from being in Lionsgate's all-time top 10 releases. Mm-hmm. And most of those top 10 are franchises, so it's basically La La Land, Fahrenheit 9/11, and Wonder.
Wow.
And people should go see Wonder after seeing Star Wars. It's like seeing another Star Wars movie.
It is.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, number five, Justice League, $4.1 million, bringing it up to $219 million.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Yeah, well, wasn't there a revelation that on Rotten Tomatoes it was the audience reaction to Jedi was less than the audience reaction to Justice League? Like, Justice League had better reviews?
Yeah, the Last Jedi backlash has become such a story this weekend that it forced people, or it made reporters actually go out and do like statistical anomalies of Rotten Tomatoes versus CinemaScore, because they got an A CinemaScore, and that's generally a much broader based, like people leaving theaters who just seen the movie,
right,
as opposed to someone sitting in their underwear in their basement can punch a button on Rotten Tomatoes and say things like, how come Ray can swim when she was on a desert island her whole life? That's the kind of stuff we're hearing.
Come on.
I swear to God.
Now we're going
to
start asking questions like that.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Number six, Daddy's Home 2, 3.8 million. And this boy hasn't even hit 100 million.
Not yet. Yeah. I mean, I think Paramount wants to get that over that hump, and but it's not going to be a hit.
Thor Ragnarok, 2.9 million, 306 million.
That's
over
a hit.
300 million.
yeah. Marvel. Yeah.
Okay. And Disaster Artist. 2.9 million, 12.9 million. How many theaters is it in?
It actually expanded this week till over, I think it's over 1,000 theaters now.
So are these solid numbers? Or
not really, because the expansion, and it dropped like 58%. So I think it was, we saw, like, the fans came out, and now the word of mouth. Not that the word of mouth, it's just people don't really know what to make of it.
It's funny, before The Last Jedi tonight, I decided to just peek my head into the Disaster Artist theater just to see what the reaction was like. And it was, there was more people in the theater than I thought would be.
What theater were you at?
At your theater, the one in Niles.
And now, the Village Crossing.
Village Crossing, right. And it was the scene where he tells, where Greg Sestero tells Tommy that he's moving out and moving in with his girlfriend, and Tommy freaks out.
Right.
And, and it's that's a funny moment. That's a funny cut to his reaction outside that restaurant. No laughs. So I don't know. Yeah, I was like, okay, I guess this is not a crowd that really knows what's going on here.
Yeah, yeah. I love burritos.
Yeah.
So Disaster Artist, it was either going to go one way or the other.
Yeah.
It was either going to be all the fans are going to come out and nobody else is going to go.
I think, but that movie, $13 million, if it makes $20 million, I think they'll be very happy
with that. Yeah. Number nine, Murder on the Orient Express, $2.4 million, $97 million.
Big international hit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, Lady Bird, number 10, 2.1 million, 25.9 million. That's
nearly
good.
Nearly right, ready to pass Moonlight as A24's all-time domestic grosser.
What was the budget for Lady Bird? Nothing, right?
What could it be?
So 25.9 is good.
Fantastic
right.
number.
And I see that Three Billboards has fallen off. Is that still doing okay?
Yeah, it did. I think it's over 20 million, or pretty close to that. I mean, it's not a massive, breakout hit, but, 20 million for a Frances McDormand movie is...
Yeah, certainly is. Yeah, when your two big stars are Frances McDormand and Woody Harrelson,
Yeah.
How long is Last Jedi going to be on top, you think?
A while.
Yeah.
I can't see anything opening the rest of the... I mean, like, even, like, Pitch Perfect 3 this week is not going to best it. Even if it drops 50%, it's still going to be probably over 90, if not over 100 next weekend.
Was Pitch Perfect 2 a big hit?
Yeah.
185.
Huge.
Remember same weekend as Mad Max Fury Road.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah.
And it outgrossed that.
No, both of those movies are big hits.
Yeah, I don't remember the first one.
You see, there's not much opening in January. I mean, maybe by the time The Post comes around, Star Wars will drop far enough that The Post will, sort of leap to the top. But, but until then... nothing's going to...
Yeah. So we're looking at the... Well, we're off for a couple of weeks anyway.
Yeah.
So when we come back, we've got some new movies to talk about, and then we're going to do our top 10 best and worst list the second weekend of January. Because I have to see the fan. I have to see Phantom
your
Thread.
Your list will be incomplete.
So,
you can't sit there.
Colin, you and I have to see Phantom
it.
Thread.
I've already seen it.
Oh, you've seen it.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, then I have to see it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right, you guys. Thanks. That was fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing all your stuff down, and everybody check out the video at WGNRadio.com. It'll be up soon. There you go. And you can see what that sounds like. Colin and Eric, you guys have great holidays, okay?
Thanks, you too.
And we'll see you in the new year.
All right.
We'll take a quick break. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.